Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Michelle Avanti. She's a very talented lady. She is a professional certified astrologer, a consulting metaphysical minister, and emotional freedom practitioner. And she has taught classes in meditation, dream interpretation, astrology, tarot archetypes, psychic development, working with spiritual laws, fixed star constellation astrology. She writes for children, and she's into photography and success for women. Welcome to the program, Michelle.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike.
Well, I wonder how you've managed to get any spare time in.
That's always a good question, but you know, there's a lot of minutes in every day.
Oh, I'm glad you look at it like that. Would I take it from all of those subjects you're interested in that astrology is your main subject?
I guess you'd say that. I am a metaphysician, so I think that's all encompassing. I began my life being taught by spiritual beings, so I've been a metaphysician since I can remember. But astrology right. is also my profession, so I don't know. I guess both of those things together would be it.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned that you've been taught by spiritual beings since birth. Can you explain what that actually means and some examples of the sort of communication you have?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. And when I was very, very young, I traveled on the inner planes, or what you call, some people call it astral, but it's more than the astral. It depends on what level you get into.
Yeah.
But the master that worked with me, I had a particular spiritual master in my youth, and he would introduce me to other spiritual masters, and he would take me different places. So I experienced a lot of the inner world, which most people have some experience with in terms of their consciousness through the dream state or through meditation or vision. And it was a huge variety of things. For example, I wanted desperately to have a horse when I was a little girl.
Yeah.
And we lived in New York City, so there was no way that we were getting a horse. We couldn't even
yeah.
have a dog. So on the inner planes, the spiritual master that I was with said, well, you can learn to ride right here. And every night I would go to sleep, I would get out of the body and I would ride horses. And I was so good at it that when I was 11 years old, finally my mother said, "We can go. You're going to get to go to camp this summer. If you save your money, you'll be able to ride horses." And I did save my money. I got on a horse for the very first time at the age of 11, and the instructor asked me, "Have you ever ridden a horse before?" And being a child and not knowing really what to say to the person, I couldn't exactly tell her I was riding horses my whole life in the inner world, because I think she would have hit me. So I said no, and in my mind I said never on a physical horse. And so we got on the horses and started to ride around. As soon as she put the horses into a trot, she came up and she did something no one would ever do to a young person riding a horse. She stepped in front of the horse and made him stop. And normally, if you're a new rider, you would fly over the horse's head.
Yeah.
Of course, I didn't. And then she grabbed my arm and tugged me off the horse and said, "You lied to me. You've been riding your whole life." And again, I didn't know really what to say to her. What was I going to say? I've been riding in the dream state ever since I was born. Of course, I couldn't say that, so I just stood there like an idiot, and about 2 weeks later, she made me a riding instructor. That's an example of the things that I've done as a child. Of course, there were also things that are a lot heavier than that.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's amazing. Is it your belief that everyone goes out of the body at different times and may have such experiences?
I absolutely know that no one stays in their body when they go to sleep at night. It's very, very rare. We have more than one body. In order to be a physical being, you have to come through different levels of consciousness to get into a physical body. And as you come through those levels of consciousness, you actually create a body at each level. So when you leave this body, you're just shifting your consciousness into a body that's already there at the astral level, or at the causal level, or at the mental level, or at the etheric level. Or if you're very, very advanced, you could just move as soul. So, yes. And people have a variety of types of experiences. Some of them become very conscious of them, where they travel forward in time and they have an experience, and then later during the day, maybe the next day or the next week, they realize they had this experience already. They traveled on the causal level forward in time and actually remembered it. Nothing happens in the physical unless it's already happened on the inner planes.
I must say, I have one time many years ago had a very brief period when I had dreams that were precognition, which is really what you're talking about, I believe. And whatever I dreamt about, I knew it was something out of the ordinary. In other words, it wasn't just an ordinary dream. And it always happened the next day. And one of them was telling me that the appointment I had as a sales rep the next day to meet another manager from my company would go a bit haywire. So when I woke in the morning, I'm thinking to myself, nothing will go wrong with that. In fact, I'll make sure I get to the place where we're going to meet in good time, etc., etc. But needless to say, everything worked out according to the dream, and I was delayed, and I couldn't get there on time. So it leads me to believe that when you have this precognition, if it's something like that, you can't actually alter it. Would you agree?
Well, I have to agree with that. Yes, there's a reason for having that experience. It should be something that allows you to know that everything is going to go well. Even though it may be haywire, the experience should give you some kind of feeling of security in that you know. In knowing, we feel much more secure even if something does not go the way that we originally planned. It will have a balance of its own. And everything is perfect in the universe despite how it appears. The mundane perception has very little relevance to the spiritual perception.
Yes, yes. I'm sure a question you get asked many times relative to dreams is, how do you remember them? Because I know, and I'm sure my experience is the same as many people, that immediately you awake, you have a recollection of it, but unless you write it down, a few hours later, you have a job to recall it. So how do you remember them?
Well, that is, you've got the point right there. Jotting it down is the key.
Is it? Right.
And some people very rarely remember dreams, and if they want to learn to remember them, then they have to take action to do so. Wherever you focus, you will manifest. That's simply a law of the universe. So if you focus on remembering your dreams, you will remember them. If you focus on the outer world, whatever you focus on becomes an all-enveloping experience. So, you know, that's just spiritual law.
Right, so how many different types of dreams are there?
Well, you know, you'll find different people have different ways of looking at that. I have, having taught dream interpretation for over 16 years, I've come to certain conclusions, and I'll say there are basically four types of dreams. There are the symbolic dreams, which everybody has at different times, where it's kind of a black and white dream usually. Could be in color, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You have really used your sensor to make sure that you do not see exactly what it is. Instead, you've put something in place. For example, I'll give you an example from a past experience I had with a client, where the client came to me and said, you know, I'm having some problems at work, and I had this dream, and it really bothers me. And I said, well, what's the dream? And she said, well, I really like animals, so I want you to know that ahead of time. She said, but in the dream, I kept killing this pig. And I said, well, Let me ask you this. What do you call your boss behind his back? And you could have seen, I mean, her face just dropped. She says, I call him a pig. And I said, well, that's why. Because you can't take the pressure at work. What your dream is doing is allowing you to release that pressure by killing the pig in a dream. And, of course, you can't have a dream where you're killing your boss. That would be just impossible for you to handle. So your sensor comes in and creates this. But we always have the keys to our own dreams. Everyone has them.
Yes, I have read that the best interpretation really lies with the dreamer.
Absolutely. That's why when I teach classes, I'll have students say, well, what dream book do you recommend? And I always say, the one that you create. Because when you wake up, if you will take that symbolic dream and you will just put down, I say, get a little tiny book, a little tiny memo pad, and jot on each individual page the first most significant word and then the next most significant word. And if you do that, then come back to each word and you say to yourself, what does this word mean to me? Right now, the first thought, jot that down. By the time you finish, you will have a sentence, and it will make sense. That's the simplest.
Well, they're certainly very good tips. You have spoken about how you can take control of your dreams. What do you actually mean by that? Why would you want to control a dream?
Well, you might want to visit with someone. Let's say you have someone in your world who is as stubborn as a wall, okay? And you can't seem to get through them. You could go in the dream state, and of course I don't say to ever yank anyone out of a body. I will never say to interfere with another's consciousness, because that is against every spiritual law. But you can go into a space that you might set up as a room and say to an angel, I would like your presence, and I would like to talk to this individual. And if the person is a public figure, you can talk to them directly in a public place. But otherwise, I'd say just talk through an angel and say, these are the thoughts I have, and I would like to get them across to this person. Will you please present them to them for me? And you'll be surprised at what kind of response you get the next day when you talk to that individual. And I'll give you an example from my own life, which others may call a miracle. I lived in the South, in the United States here in the South at one time, and as soon as I had moved into this little town in the South, I went to the library, because I think libraries are very important places. I went to see what kind of books were in the library, and there was nothing on metaphysics, absolutely nothing. They had lots and lots of Bibles, but nothing on metaphysics, and I thought, wow, what are these children going to be able to find if they have questions? So I went back to my house. I took 12 different books from my collection of books, and I went back to the library and said, I'd like to donate these books. I see that particular area just is very low. You don't have any books in this genre. And the woman looked at me, and she looked at the books, and she says, you know, we don't take those kind of books. Now, at that moment, I could have gotten a little irate, but I did not. I simply took the books, and I said, thank you, and I left. And that night, on the inner planes, I went directly to that library, which is a public place, and there she was, and I spoke with her. I read her the Bill of Rights. I explained to her that libraries are public places that are sanctuaries of knowledge, where every individual should be able to find answers to their questions.
Yes.
And when I was finished, I let it go. I went back to the library the next day. I carried exactly the same number of books. I went right to the same exact librarian, and I said exactly the same words I said the day before. She looked at the books, she looked at me, and she said, thank you so much. We would love to have these books. And I walked back out.
That's amazing. Did she acknowledge the fact that she had seen you the day before?
Absolutely not. She did not ever recognize me from the day before, nor would she remember that I had been there.
Ah, right.
And it
would seem strange that she wouldn't relate to the fact that you've come in 2 days running.
No. And that's because on the inner planes she had changed her perception. And as such, she let go of the perception she had the day before, and therefore would never even connect to that. We have the ability to do that. That's why someone can appear and disappear.
Yes.
That's part of the art of doing
also, that. Sorry?
That's part
yeah,
of the art of
doing that. I guess when you speak about that, you also introduce a note of caution that you can't use this type of thing for the wrong purposes.
Absolutely not. I mean, you should always live within the spiritual laws. What is the purpose of doing anything that is opposed to that? By doing anything that is opposed to that, you will incur upon you things that you really don't want. So your awareness is shortchanged. Anyone who tries to use the spiritual laws in a way that is for their own control, that is for their own personal benefit, and that would take control of another individual, will incur damage that will hurt them down the road, and it's absolutely not what they want.
Yeah.
To give you an example of that, years ago I would have people who would come to me. I lived down in Vegas at the time, and I had a bookstore, and people would come to me, and they'd say, I would really like to get this man back into my life. And I would look at them and say, why? And they'd say, because I love them, and they've left me for another woman, or I love them, and they've left me for whatever reason. And I'd say, why do you think that because you love them, you should have them in your life? And they'd say, because I want them. I'd say, do you realize that using any power that you have to control another will incur something into your life that will imprison you down the road? You'll pull this person back into your life, and you can probably do that, depending on what their state of consciousness is. And then what you're going to find is you're going to be trapped in a relationship that you hate, and something will be taken away from you as a result of that. Why would you want to do that? When instead, you can simply open the door and say to Spirit, I want the relationship in my life that will give me the abundance, the joy, and the long-term experience that will make me feel secure and fulfilled. Then you are doing what you need to do to bring what you really want in your life. Because I can tell you right now, and I can tell every single listener who's listening, there is only one thing that you really want, and that is happiness.
Yes.
You want to be happy.
Indeed. I totally agree with you. Now, you spoke a little earlier about angels. Do you have much communication with them?
You know, I believe everyone does. I personally have certain angels that I work with from time to time, and at different times in my life, they've been more prevalent or more even physically visible than at other times, depending on what my needs are. But I tend to work with Michael the Archangel more than any other angel, although at different times there have been others in my life. When I need someone to speak for me, when I get into a position where I don't know the answer, I always call on Michael the Archangel, and he has used my body to speak to others. I don't always remember what he says, but I always come back into the body and see that the person is very content with the answer, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you've got a book coming out next year titled Secrets of Wisdom, and it includes something relating to archetypes. And I'm very intrigued by your statement that our real nature is based on our date of birth, and you can sort of size that up in about 90 seconds. So when you say your real nature, what are you actually saying?
I'm saying that soul makes choices before it comes into a physical body, and it chooses a particular kind of energy, a particular kind of nature that will give it the specific challenges and the specific talents that it needs to achieve what it desires to achieve in this lifetime. And, for example, some people are, I want to say, we'll give a number. Let's pull a number out of the hat. Pick a number. Pick any number you want, any number from 1 to 10, or any number. It doesn't matter. It'll always come back to a single digit.
7.
Okay, 7. Those are individuals who come in to experience change in this lifetime. They are not sit-still kinds of people. They want life to move forward. And they're always moving forward. They're not going to hang out with people who are slow speakers. They're not going to hang out with people who take a long time to make decisions. They're risk takers. They're here to make change, and their life revolves around that experience. What do I mean by that? Well, when things change in their life, they find themselves in zones where they have courage to make change, but at the same time, they may have emotional attachments to old things that can hang around for years, and they really have a hard time letting go of specific emotional experiences. So they're here to learn that. That's a challenge that comes to them. There are challenges connected to change, and there are opportunities connected to change. But I guarantee that if your number is 7, you're someone who likes to do things quickly, and you'll find that your life is always filled with changes, and that you are also challenged by being attached to things that you don't emotionally know how to let go of.
Right.
Especially
now,
feeling sorry for you.
What you're doing is reducing the birth date to a single number. So you're actually using a form of numerology. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It is actually the form of numerology that it is based on the Tree of Life, which is the basis of the work of mysticism that was carried forward from Atlantis by the Israelites. It's called the Kabbalah.
Right. That's very
interesting. And I believe that from my experience with the higher beings that I've worked with over my lifetime, that when this particular area of the universes of God was created, that a hierarchy got together and said, how will we put together the challenges of consciousness that individuals will experience when they come into this particular zone of creation? You'll find that in that Tree of Life. It's connected to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where these states of archetypes, states of consciousness come from.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that you can't respond to all of them. I believe you can.
Right. I've never heard of a fixed star constellation astrology. I'd be interested to hear a little about that, how it differs from the norm.
Well, you know, in normal astrology, or what we call Western astrology, we work with the constellations along the ecliptic. They are the constellations that you would see directly out from the equator that travel around, or that our planet travels through. So those are the 12 signs of the zodiac. And actually, I won't get into that. It does change because fixed stars move at a rate of about a degree every century. Fixed stars are the stars that you look at when you look at constellations. Okay? For example, if you look at the Big Dipper, we don't talk about the Big Dipper in astrology, but the Big Dipper consists of certain fixed stars. Polaris is here, and Polaris is a very important star. When you were born, at the moment that you were born, there were stars that were connecting, traveling above the horizon, and stars that were below the horizon. And at the moment of your birth, those stars that were on what we call the axis, which were at the highest zenith at the moment you were born, at the ascendant, ascending over the horizon, descending below the horizon, or at the darkest point in the sky when you were born, those fixed stars are the ones that will be most active in your life. And I'll give you an example of fixed stars. Years ago, when Princess Diana died, I was president of NCGR chapter down in Las Vegas at the time, and I was going to be doing a talk on synastry, actually, on relationship astrology. And I got a call that Princess Diana had died, and please would I come and talk on that. So I immediately went to look to see what were the charts, what was her chart, what were the charts of that time, what was the mundane astrology speaking. And there were not a lot of signatures of her death, astrologically speaking, from Western astrology. I went and looked at the Arabic parts, and I looked at the fixed star astrology, and beyond any shadow of a doubt, you could not miss what would happen to this person.
Wow.
Al Ghul, which many people have heard of, that is a fixed star. It's the star in the face of Medusa that is held in the sky. It's actually right in the head of Medusa. And that star speaks of having one's head chopped off or having one die as a result of a loss at the neck. You will see that fixed star completely activated at the moment that Princess Diana died. Also, the same case is in the case of Nicole Simpson. That fixed star was active at the time she died. Both of them have connections in the neck as a result of death, or that resulted in death. That's an example of fixed stars. They're very, very powerful, and most people don't know anything about them. And yet they are behind your chart. They are always there. I can look at a person's chart, and they'll have all kinds of nurturing elements that speak of them being a very kind or gentle, nurturing individual. And yet then they'll say to me, but I'm not. And I will look again, and there is a fixed star that speaks of the sharp tongue. They are on the point of the knife of one of the constellations.
Yes.
So we're able to see immediately that this person will have a sharp tongue, and yet then when we look Western astrology, we'll see that with certain people, that is diminished. And there they are, the nurturer. So there's a lot more to astrology when we miss the fixed stars. Fixed stars are the way the ancient astrologers used to look at everything.
Right. So are you saying that in a normal chart there are fixed stars, but what you're doing is taking them out of the chart and giving a reading of those by themselves?
I actually integrate them, but yes, you can give a reading just on the fixed stars, or you can give a reading where you integrate the fixed stars with Western astrology.
Right.
Most Western astrologers never look at the fixed stars. They never look at them at all.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, they will only look at where are the two luminaries and eight planets in terms of the constellations that we use astrologically speaking.
Yes.
And how did they land in the houses? In other words, where were they in terms of the horizon line at the time of birth? And then where are the transits? Where are the planets now? Now, if you go back to what is my hypothesis about why astrology works because when a person takes their very first breath, at that very moment, there is an activation of the DNA through these huge magnetic electrical forces that we call planets or fixed stars. I believe it leaves some type of geometric pattern on the DNA, and then as the planets continue to move in the sky, under certain geometric actions, they activate.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be pretty much a clear statement by the research that has been done for the last, well, more than 4,000 years. Unfortunately, it wasn't only in the last century did we come to understand resonance that I would be able to say this and not think I was talking about some magic. Resonance is a very active thing.
Right.
So
this knowledge that you're speaking of in astrology, does that go back beyond Egyptian times to Atlantis? I mean, age-old profession?
I believe absolutely. I believe the Atlanteans were fully aware of the stars. I don't think you can go into any prehistoric, what they call prehistoric culture, and not see some element of star wisdom on the walls or in the architecture. Ancient times show that clearly, that they were always aiming temples, always setting their points of view, their points of importance, their ritual statements are connected to the stars. Always have been.
Yes. That's particularly apparent, isn't it, in Egypt with their fascination with the constellation of Orion?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Of course, Orion, when you understand how fixed stars move at a rate of about 1 degree a century, you'll see that Orion actually started to move below the horizon line before the end of the Egyptian era. And so you had a change in the gods. It's absolutely fascinating when you study that.
Yes. Just taking you up on that point you've raised, what was the change? Do you know what it was?
Well, what happened, we went from, and I'm not very good on this history, but Orion's son is the one who took over, and that's the constellation that comes right after Orion.
Yes.
And that also is noticeable in terms of centuries, in terms of consciousness. We've gone from an Aries type of consciousness, and this is in recorded history, where an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth was kind of the saying of the Old Testament. That is an Aries consciousness. Aries moved below the horizon at one point, and Taurus rose. And when that happened, we had another change. Actually, it's the other way around. Taurus went below the horizon, then Aries rose, then after Aries came Pisces. So the Christian element came after the Aries element. But before that, right, we had Taurus. And Taurus I'm trying to think the god that they called him. And actually, if you go back in terms of history, you'll find he's the Babylonian god. You'll find that the stories of that Babylonian god are repeated. They are repeated in the Christian history. It's all very interesting when you start to study it.
Right.
And at this point in time, we come to another change in consciousness where we're going past the Piscean consciousness and into the Aquarian consciousness.
Yes.
And this consciousness calls for a different road, where the Piscean consciousness is one of brotherhood, but there are hidden elements to the Piscean consciousness that no one talks about, and that is the 12th house issue, which is an issue of imprisonment. How do we release ourselves from self-sabotage, which is the subconscious experience of karmic experience, where we are reactive in life as a result of old karma or old lifetimes? That's part of the Piscean consciousness that no one speaks of. As we come into the Aquarian age, we come into a time where we will be more open to friendship and acknowledging differences, honoring differences, and completely freeing ourselves from old karma. That's part of what the issue of 2012 is about.
Yes. I mean, 2012 and ascension are actually the means of breaking out of this prison, aren't they?
Absolutely. And what is the prison? Part of that prison is the karmic debt that we have lived through. We are learning that you can ascend beyond karma. 2012 is also a breaking free of the time consciousness, which we created. There is no time and space in the spiritual essence. It doesn't exist. We create time and space. And if there's anyone who's listening who doubts that time and space is real, or they doubt that it's not real, and they think it's real, I want them to think for a minute. How many times in your life have you experienced days where you know they're just moving so slowly? You get so much more done in 1 hour some days and so much less done other days. Why is that?
Hmm.
It has to do with consciousness. The overall consciousness is moving time. We agree to it as a society, and as a society, our consciousness makes it flow faster or constricts it.
Yes. It's really, isn't it, coming down to our perception of time?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm. Is
you can collapse.
Spiritual? Yeah. I was going to say, is karma a spiritual law?
Well, the law of what you reap, so shall you sow, is a law. It is a spiritual law. But, as with other things, there are paradoxes in the universe. And as you start to travel beyond certain levels of consciousness, you will live at such an even keel that karma no longer has any reason to be, because you're no longer seeding anything. And that's what we're coming to. We're coming to a new state. I'm not saying everyone on the planet's going to reach it either, so don't misinterpret. But as a whole, this sentient being that we're living on is working to move into a new state of consciousness. And hopefully there'll be many who decide to ascend with it.
Absolutely, yes. Now, I'd like to move on to your knowledge of psychic and metaphysical matters. An important question that people ask when they start to think about themselves is, why am I here? What's your general idea about that?
Well, I believe that people are in physical bodies because they've come to experience. They have had the opportunity to experience at a lower level of consciousness in order, when I say lower level here, I don't mean the individual's consciousness, I mean in terms of the states of creation. So, at any rate, they've come here to experience what it is like to have physicality. By doing that, they expand their ability to be compassionate. And that's why we come. I think we come more to learn compassion, because to be a creator, if you are a creator without compassion, you will not create at the greatest level. And every single soul is a viable creator.
Yes. We create even now without full realization of what we're doing. But I guess the difference now, as to being in some of the higher realms, is we cannot create instantly, but what we are creating comes to us in the course of time. Is that so?
I'd say that's absolutely true, and there's a real reason why we don't create instantly. We don't create instantly because, well, some of us do create instantly, so I won't say that's absolutely the case, but I will say this. For the majority of people, you don't create instantly because you're not really fully focused, and you're not fully understanding that creation is a whole experience, that it can be a whole experience. You may embed in it things that are of a negative nature, and as a result can create something that you really don't want. So it's better to do it over time, because over time allows you to evolve further, to make your creation more of what you really want it to be.
Yes. Now, you've undoubtedly heard and possibly read about the book called The Secret, which, to my mind, did a lot of promotion of the idea that you can gain financial wealth. Now, it seems to me that since we come into life to experience, not everyone is due to experience it from a wealthy point of view. So how do you think people can approach the idea of creation when possibly not everything is available to them?
Well, you know, I have to disagree. I think everything is available to everyone.
You do, right, yes.
I absolutely do believe that. But I believe that your state of consciousness may cause you not to make those things available, because you have chosen as soul to have certain experiences to challenge you to grow into becoming more whole in different areas. As a result of that, you may never be wealthy. But as you go through life, if you take what the value of this secret is, which I believe the value is understanding that you have the ability to manifest, and you start to focus on the art of manifesting what you want in your life, you will focus on the positive elements of life, and your life will expand.
Right.
So you may overcome those challenges more rapidly. I don't think, you know, I don't think a lot of people are here to be wealthy specifically. But then on the other hand, what is wealth? You know, I talk to clients all the time, and I will always tell them, one person's version of wealth is to simply own a home. Another person's version of wealth is to own a mansion.
Yeah.
What is your version of wealth? I think if one will ask the questions of what is important to them and then align their lives so they will focus on manifesting those things, they are wealthy.
Yes. I think it comes down to wanting happiness, but as we know, you can't really buy happiness.
No. It has nothing to do with money. Absolutely not.
No.
It has more to do with who you are, and I believe being your authentic self is the real answer to happiness. When we are who we are, truly who we are, without having to worry about what this person thinks or what that person thinks, what to wear, what to drive, what kind of house I own, what my job is, what my boss thinks of me, or a myriad number of other things, when we simply are aware that we are soul, and that soul is a powerful, wonderful, balanced being in and of itself, when we align ourselves with that consciousness, we'll be happy.
Yes. Do you believe that we all come into life with a life plan?
I do. But, you know, that life plan is not like, well, I have lined out every single second of my life. I believe that before you come into a body, you sit, and when I talk to my clients about it, I usually say, well, just imagine a big table, and there you are with your very best friends. And you're saying, I'm going down into that physical reality, and this is what I want to achieve. And you make a list of the things you want to achieve.
Yeah.
I want to finish up the karma with this person. I want to have this experience. In my last life, I wasn't secure. I want to make sure I always have security with food. And you make this list, and then you lay it out. And you may say, well, at the age of 40, I want to change jobs and I want to have this experience. You lay out the main points in your life. There's a lot of points in between where you can do anything. It's very similar to, let's say you decided you wanted to go from London to Rome. You're going to make a decision as to how you're going to get there, what stops you're going to see on the way, who you may meet, and what types of food you may want to eat. You know, there could be a variety of things, but you'll lay them out, and you'll ask your friends, well, what do you think of this, and what do you think of that? And you'll lay this plan out, and you'll follow through with most of that plan. Well, in between, you're going to have some amazing experiences that you had no idea you'd have, or perhaps some that are irritating and frustrating.
Yeah.
But that's
right now. With the idea, which I think is in many people's minds, of ascension coming along and the need to raise the level of consciousness on the earth, there's been a lot of talk about the advanced children that have come into the earth, the indigo, crystal or rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess some parents are wondering if there's any way of determining whether their child is one of these beings. Do you think that's possible?
Oh, I don't doubt it at all. I'm quite certain it's possible. One of the key elements to the new energies or the new rays that are coming in through the children is that many of the ones that are coming in now are not have not been materially incarnating for a long, long time. What happened when we left Atlantis, one of the things that happened, and even for Mu, there were those who said, I will not continue to incarnate, but I will be there at the time where consciousness must change, and I will be there to remind you. And so it's a whole groups of souls who held back. Why? Because they knew that those of us who had the courage to keep incarnating, would become so deep in the material that we would have lost our ability to see who we are. The mask that we wear becomes thicker and thicker and thicker over lifetimes unless you literally have been working to keep it off. So these souls come back in to help us move back to that level of consciousness where we are in unity with each other, where we connect. It was in Mu that we were connected with all life forms, and as we went into Atlantis, the early parts of Atlantis, we were still in that connection, but eventually we came to language, and language is the Tower of Babel. Language is the point of separation of life.
Yeah.
We don't know the language of the trees anymore because we require a language called English. Oh, so we don't even know our neighbor who speaks Gaelic. We can't understand them. That separation never existed before. And so these souls are coming back to bring us back into that awareness that there is another way to communicate with all life. And they also, immediacy is bringing us back to integrity, which is missing at such a blatant level in the world today that it's absolutely scary to me. I'm witnessing what's going on here in the United States with our electoral process, where advertisements are blatant lies, and I sit here and think, where is the integrity? They've completely forgotten what the purpose of being elected is.
Yes, yes.
It's
and
terrifying.
And forgotten their oaths as well, I think.
And yes. Probably, certainly in other countries, I'm obviously not familiar with what goes on everywhere. So.
Yes. Now, just coming back to these special children a minute, at what age would you think it would become apparent that they are different in that way?
You know, I think it's from the time that they're actually born. I think it's noticeable. If you're paying attention, their awareness is different. Their way of responding is different. Some will respond with tremendous amounts of love to everything, and these are the newest ones that are coming in. There's an enormous amount of love that pours out of them. It's almost a balancing that they're bringing in through the consciousness that they carry. And that should be very noticeable. It's not, well, you know, if you're a young parent, you may not be fully aware of that because you haven't witnessed the different stages of growth that those of us who are older have witnessed. But the balancing of love, that energy that pours out of them, those that are not the newest children, but the indigo ray came to demand integrity. And that ray can react actually with anger. They can react with the kind of anger that they want to see people step up to the plate. But the newer groups, the crystal and the rainbow, they're coming in with this enormous love energy to bring things into balance and harmony. So I think if you're paying attention, you can't really miss it.
Right. Now, we're having a terrifically interesting chat with you, Michelle. The program runs for 55 minutes. I want to give you ample time to talk about your books and tell our listeners about your websites and where they can reach them. But you write for children. Tell us a little bit about the idea behind writing children's books.
Well, I have a series called Tales of Timor, and the first book is out and has been out for a little while. Matter of fact, it's going to be published now in Italian, which I'm really excited about. Spirit drove me to write this series. The first in the series is called Grihi, The Journey of Five, and it is Metaphysics 101 if you look at it deeper, but if you just enjoy the ride, it's a wonderful story about a dragon who does not know who he is. He's born as a result of a prophecy, and he's born with a deep-thinking mind and a big heart, very much like each of us. We are born that way, but we don't know who we are. We don't know what our purpose is. He doesn't know his purpose, and he actually laments being born a dragon because he's nothing like any other dragon on the planet. He is different. He's not fierce. And his journey is one to discover that being who you are is actually the best thing you can possibly do. Loving yourself and honoring yourself, you will discover that you have tremendous gifts to give to everyone else. Yeah. Honoring our differences is the key. And Spirit wanted the children's book out before the nonfiction Secrets of Wisdom, which actually addresses the same thing from a completely different point. That is that we must learn to love ourselves. It is so important that you honor who you are in all your differences. Be kind to who you are. And honor the differences in others without trying to change them. When we do this, we come into greater balance and harmony. And that is what we need to help balance the planet and to move to the next level.
People have a problem sometimes, depending on their upbringing, because they believe if they make mistakes, or shall we use the word sin, that they're lining up some sort of punishment for themselves, so they actually feel like lesser beings.
And that is an unfortunate teaching that has been around for way too long. It's been around for more than 2,000 years.
Yeah,
we need
yeah.
to step beyond that. Make a remedy and move forward. That's all you really need to do, is remedy it as best as you can and move forward, no matter what you've done.
Yeah.
It's okay. I could not be who I am if I did not have the flaws that I have created over many lifetimes. When I teach a class, the very first thing I say to my students is, do not put me on a pedestal. I am the good, the bad, and the ugly. I have been all of that. And we all are. We need to honor that, because those parts of us make us more compassionate towards others who are in that zone at this time. It takes tremendous courage to go down a road that is a difficult, painful, destructive road. But if you are aware of it at this time, or someone brings you to that awareness, step up to the plate, release it, love yourself, bless yourself, and move forward, because your soul first and foremost, and soul is in perfection at all times. Materiality is only the base element. It is not who you are.
That's very good advice. Now, Michelle, minutes are rushing by here. Tell our listeners a little bit about your website and how they can reach them.
You can go to talesoftomore.com, that's T-A-L-E-S-O-F-T as in Tom, A-M as in Michael, O-O-R.com, and there you can find my book. Or you can just put my name in and Google me, Avanti,
right.
A-V-A-N-T-I, and the first name is Michelle with one L. I soon will have up MichelleAvanti.com and Greehy.com, and I also have AstrologyAndMore.com. So, but if you Google me, you'll find me. I'm all over the net. I have blogs and everything else, and I welcome any questions that anyone has.
Right. From your astrological website, do you actually do what I would call internet readings?
No, I do not. I have many, many clients that I've had for a long, long time. And so all my contact information is there. If a person wants to call me or email me, they can. And I actually schedule a time and then work with them at that time.
Right. So what you're saying, that there are telephone consultations, in other words, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. I live in the middle of nowhere, basically.
Okay, that's fine. Great.
So, yes, most of my clients call me on the phone, and they call through a computer if they need to.
Okay.
Whatever way works for them.
Well, I can tell you, when I write the archives up for the program on the BBS radio site, I will mention these web addresses anyway, so people won't miss out if they want to check on it. We're actually coming to the end of the program now, Michelle. It's been so interesting, I've hardly noticed the time going by. And I know you could have spoken a lot more about other matters, but it's been very, very interesting. I have to thank you very much for coming onto the program. You're certainly a very learned lady, and I wish you all the success with your book that's coming out.
Thank you so much, Mike, and I'm so honored to be able to speak with you today.
Thank you very much. What I'll do now is just quickly confirm that my guest next week, which is a pre-recorded program because I'm on a week's break, is Blossom Goodchild, and she's becoming well known throughout the, shall we say, psychic cycles and with people interested in ascension and such matters, because she has announced the sighting which is to take place, that is a UFO sighting, on the 14th of October. She's an extremely lovely lady. She comes over as being very spiritual. I certainly have a lot of confidence in the channeling that she's done. I think it's a matter of just keeping up to date with it by keeping in touch with her website. So thank you very much for being with me. As I said, I'll be away next week, but I will be back as normal the week after. God bless you all.